my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with the one, the only, the mighty, the magnificent, the magical, the mermaid, Adam Stoker. I ran out of M words, Adam.
Today's episode is brought to you by the letter M.
That's right. I felt like we should bring a little Sesame Street into the show. Is that all right?
You know, the world needs a little more Sesame Street in today's day and age, I think.
That's great. But
you
I
know,
do
the
need...
Sesame characters said that they were going to be a little forgiving of each other.
Well, maybe we can't do Sesame Street then. We're going to have to be more like Muppets, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Maybe we'll be the Muppets.
I was gonna say, hey, Adam, can you perform the role of Count today? And you have to do the whole episode in the accent of Count from Sesame Street, but maybe not. But
you know
the voice
what? Whenever
you guys
I
heard,
try to do an accent, all roads lead to something that's going to get me in trouble. So I just don't even.
It sounds
try.
Australian Irish, every accent you've ever tried. So let's probably avoid it. But we're joined today, Adam, with Danielle Hollander from Visit Orlando. Danielle, welcome to the show. This is your debut on the show. We're glad to have you.
Ah, happy to be here. It's great to have a little bit of fun and, you know, touch base and see you guys.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, it's a Friday when we're recording this. We release on Thursdays, but I'm already kind of ready for the weekend. So I'm a little giddy today. We've recorded a couple of episodes this week to try to get some in the bank for the year. And the first couple coming back from the holiday were a little rough for me and for Adam, especially for Adam, because, you know, he's obviously a little rusty and he's always going to underperform. But today, I think we're all going to bring our A game. That's at least what I hope. Adam, you ready for your A game?
I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready. Let's do it.
Awesome. Well, you know, the best way to bring the A game, the only way I know how to bring an A game really is the greatest segment in all of entertainment, especially in the destination world. Let's go for it, man. It's time for Stu's News.
Back by popular demand.
We've got to ask you, you know, you've not been on the show before. I don't know how much of a bestie you are or how many episodes you've listened to, but what are your thoughts on this jingle?
My thoughts on the jingle, I think, you know, it's right up there with Demon Hunters. You know, I think it's going to be
nice.
Right there. It's got that same vibe. One of my favorite movies of the year, you know. So I think K-pop Demon Hunters, you guys are going to be right in that running.
Well, I didn't know you were inspired by K-pop when you did this, but that makes a lot of sense now. It's all coming
together.
It is
a pretty good description. The sad part is that we've now reached the point with the K-pop Demon Hunters songs, at least in my household, where my kids originally, when it was on, would just start screaming it out. In fact, I've got video of my daughter just screaming K-pop Demon Hunters. Now, if it comes on the radio, they're like, turn it off, no. And so a little nervous about comparing the jingle to that one because that may be where it ends up.
Hey, oversaturation is a real thing, man. What can I tell you? All right, today's Stu's News.
Hold on,
I think
Danielle was saying something there, Stuart.
Sorry, go ahead, Danielle.
It's time to refresh. So maybe, you know, your home poll is giving you that indication, huh?
That's right. I think she's on my side. We should eliminate the jingle. We should replace it with something new, maybe inspired by something other than K-pop. Who knows?
We'll take it into consideration for sure.
All right. We'll take it to the board of directors. Right?
Yeah.
Because that's what I always say to people when there's like a controversial question. I'm like, Joanna on our team, when I first started in the DMO world, she said, always keep a committee or a board between you and a big decision. And so sounds like you're going to do the same there, Adam. So today's Stu's News is brought to you by Bank of America. They just released a report based on Visa use of how many households traveled in 2025. And what's interesting about it is, you know, we saw some softening in the market primarily due to the economy last year. And so it was down slightly. The number of households are in the 33 to 35% range, depending on the time of year that actually traveled, which was a little bit down from 24 and 23, but it's still like 2% higher, which if you look at it, it looks significant than it was back in 2019, you know? So we've seen a little softening, and I don't know, Danielle, if you've seen this in your market, we certainly have in Myrtle Beach where, you know, 22, 23 were like banger years, and then we sort of saw a little bit of softening in even the end of 24 and into 25, certainly. But I just thought it was this interesting. Bank of America is sort of corroborating what we're seeing a little bit, that not quite as many people did travel last year, but was still probably more people, households traveling than did in 2019. Adam, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, as I think about why that might be the case, I tie it a lot to the labor market. I think, the labor market always ebbs and flows between is it an employer market or is it an employees market, where employees during an employees market have tons of options for more money, and there's not a lot of risk for them if they were to lose their job or something like that. And then when it's an employer's market, it's maybe jobs are a little bit more scarce and people need to maybe put a little more time and attention in protecting their role with their employer. And I look at where we were in 22 and 23, and I just remember how hard it was as an organization to find marketing people who were reliable. And luckily, we found several that were great, but there were some job applications that you would open up and there's no applicants, right? Because people had so many options. And now we're at the point where when we post a job, we're getting 100 applicants in the first couple of hours, right? And so I think that travel will tend to mirror where we're at in the employee-employer relationship, and what kind of market it is. Because I really believe that people are more comfortable traveling when they know that either their job is totally secure and they can take as much PTO as they want, or if they know that if something happened with their existing job, there's five more out there waiting for them that they could go get. I think that really does affect travel decisions and PTO usage.
Certainly a component. Danielle, any insight from you on this one?
Yeah, I would assume this is more domestic than international, but.
It is,
You
yeah.
know, from, yeah. So, in that 22 and 23, 21, none of our competitors were open and there still was limited travel. And 22 and 23 was a great European migration where people were traveling so much internationally because they couldn't. I think the other is what you saw is you have a lot of companies that are back in their offices now, whereas people were traveling and working remotely. So, depending on how they count what travel was, if I go for a week and work out of Arizona, is that being counted as travel? Where now a lot more companies are bringing their folks back. We're hybrid, but and you can do work from anywhere, but you still have to plan it. That's 2 days a week that you're supposed to be in the office. So, you either take part of PTO or part of work from anywhere. Whereas before, if you were 100%, 100% remote, you could just pick up and go. And that may be also contributing a little bit to it that you just don't have that, to your point, Adam, that freedom of just picking up and going. You have to either negotiate it, have a conversation about it, take your PTO. So maybe you're not going to do that as much. So we've seen, we've not necessarily seen a drop in travel, but certainly also, the economy, at certain tiers are impacting, how people are traveling.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's both the opportunity to travel and the means to travel. You know, the economy is certainly, as you said, for certain segments, certainly lower income families has been a struggle with grocery prices and other stuff. You know, CPI has been a challenge. But the good news for all of us is there's still, it seems that more people are going to continue to travel than prior pre-pandemic, right? I think what we saw was the pandemic made people reprioritize. And I think this next generation of folks that are traveling, I definitely prioritize experiences over material possessions, which we've seen that narrative for a while now, but that seems to continue. And so it gives me a little bit of hope for this year. And so hopefully that trend continues that people want to continue to travel.
And I think for our industry, it's been very interesting because, we were talking about like July is always such a huge travel month for us. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, July, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. And it was a record TDT collection. And somebody said to me, they're like, why did it have to feel so hard? So I think, what is also happening, and it happened right after when we had those two record years, right? Domestic travel was through the roof because people couldn't go anywhere. And then everybody's stakeholders or investors thought those numbers were going to continue.
Yeah.
And for us, obviously, domestic is a huge portion. And we're having record years of ever on certain months still, when you look at TDT collections. And again, some of that's volume, some of that's price. But 2019 was a banner year for travel. And when you're still continuing, but people still in the industry aren't feeling comfortable, it's, I think part of it is, success breeds success, but it also breeds higher expectations. And for our partners, hey, as we know, January 1st, everything went to zero. Right. I say this all the time at the beginning of the year to the team. You hit a number come January 1st. We're not a subscription service as travel, right? Your number goes to zero. And if you have 75 million, we got to get back to 75 million, then build on that. It's not like we're just getting X amount to hit a goal. You start, everybody, all of us start at zero. And I don't think people think about that. I know our stakeholders don't. They're like, oh, you're trying to get to 80 million and you're at 74, 75. Oh, that's only five more. I'm like, oh no, that's 75 in a year plus that. And when I say that, everybody takes a pause and goes, oh yeah, you're right. So for our industry, that's kind of an interesting thing that others don't, we don't have rooms on the books. We don't have Netflix subscriptions already that you're building upon. And I think that's always an interesting thing for our stakeholders, at least, to really grasp and understand.
Yeah, great perspective. I mean, the fact we have to earn every visit every year, like it isn't a guarantee. I mean, we've
Yeah.
seen that where there's been disruption. Like I think back to when the Gulf Shores had some of the oil spill that happened several years ago, and it was like, okay, so we're not guaranteed to get the people we thought we were going to get when one of our major amenities, in this case, the beach, was taken out of commission for a little while. So, all right, let's jump into the topic. I just realized my camera just dropped. Let me see why that happened. But let's keep plugging on.
It's one of those new
Yeah,
smart
let's talk about
cameras.
the what's yeah. You say smart cameras?
Yeah.
I broke it. Is that what you're suggesting?
It only
Thanks.
shows what the audience wants to see.
That's true. But if that was the case, it
Oh.
wouldn't cut to a picture of me, right? Let's talk about the topic. So Danielle, when we ask guests to come on the show, we always ask them about what their pet peeves are or what they'd like to see changed or what is their love letter to the industry. And you brought a really interesting topic because it's something that we've been talking a lot internally about, and that is how as organizations we're siloed, right? And one of the interesting things about our organizations is I've never found two DMOs that are structured the same way. You know, I bet if we compared notes, even in scale, the number of employees, the number of and even the relationship of how many in marketing versus sales versus other departments is different. Like it doesn't seem like there's been a blueprint that's been developed of how to run a DMO and some of that scale, but some of it's just nuance of your market. But let's talk a little bit about this. Like what are you doing in Orlando to try to combat the fact that historically folks like marketing and sales aren't necessarily running from the same playbook, on the same strategy, or even communicating as effectively as they should be. So, give us sort of a lowdown of how you guys are set up and what you guys are doing.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the things that's helped a lot is, and every organization, and some may not, is, we really have a strategic plan that we live by, and it's an active thing, so we at least are kind of on that same page. And it was interesting last year, every year we have a word. Okay, so one year it was unreasonable hospitality, and we leaned into that. Last year was collaboration, and our HR team did this great program called Collaborama, where each of the teams would present what they do and how they work with other teams in the organization. Because sometimes it's just we're all running so fast, you don't even realize what everybody is really doing on a daily or weekly basis. And I tell this with all new hires. I said, you will do something and the three people it impacts, you don't know the 14 others that it impacts. And I think that's because we're such an interesting animal as DMOs. Because some of us are we're marketing sales, but we might be a membership organization and we're a community organization. So we run five different business models. And it's kind of like, how do you make sure that you're in this area? So that was kind of an interesting that thing that our HR team has done. And we are really working on it intentionally and trying to make sure, and it does start with leadership. I'm really blessed to have Lisa Messina as our chief sales officer. And this past year, when we started planning, we had the entire team in a room, whether it was trade show and events, creative services, sales, marketing, and we started talking about strategy all together and how does that impact. And then we did one whole day on meetings and convention, one whole day on leisure, and one whole day on travel industry sales. So everybody heard the same thing, had the same opportunity to weigh in. And I can tell you from that, the planning just really helped. Now we structure, you asked a little bit about structure. I have people that are dedicated to meetings and conventions, and they actually sit in that. Well, when we were in a quadrant, we just kind of we're in the middle of a transition in our office, but they would sit with that sales team. And part of that was the optics of, it's usually, well, the marketing team or the sales team. Well, when they're sitting right across from you and in on all your meetings, they become almost more of an extension of that team. So we've done some things that are really intentional, but that way, because it is so hard to stay connected. And so, I think from a DMO perspective, I think breaking down those lines, and even, when we go to conferences or things, this is the sales track, this is the marketing track. The bottom line is for us as a marketing team, we either initiate things or support things or are impacted by it. So there is no, there is no, there's not one thing that we don't touch, but it's also clarity. And we talk about this in our team meetings too, like, hey, listen, you may not be the lead. So let's identify. And sometimes we've had to say, marketing people are uniquely wired to be able to take a lot of information and drive a strategy. Our legal team might not be, our external team might not be, but once we do that, because our CEO asked me that, she was like, why does everything end up in marketing? I said, because everybody just tosses it. She goes, but that's not right. You guys don't need to be leading everything. I was like, I don't disagree. But what we found is once we could do that structure, then we went to the person that should be leading it. And they were part of those conversations. We said, okay, now this is not an advertising or marketing. Here's the structure. Now you lead and we'll support. But they just sometimes don't know where to start. And our teams are kind of that unique animal that they're used to taking a lot of stuff and boiling it down. So I think to your point, I don't think we're all structured the same, but I think we can define our roles really well on who's leading, who's following, what does everybody need? Because we can all bring those strengths a little bit more than maybe that we're doing today.
And it's situational. Adam, you just heard that. Any response for you or anything stands out?
Well, I actually love a couple of the things that you're doing, and I feel like some of the things that you mentioned were an unlock for us in 2025 in our organization. And I want to talk through it a little bit because one of the things that's happened in marketing and outside of marketing is that everyone's role has gotten so siloed that you actually kind of don't see the forest for the trees anymore, right? And so many of us get into these little silos that we have blinders on of what anyone else is doing. And I feel like there was a lot of benefit to that over the last 10 or 15 years because generalists aren't great Facebook ad buyers, right? And yet they're still very strategic thinkers, but you need someone who knows how to get into the platform and really make the gritty changes that need to be made to drive more revenue. And so you had all these silos, and I really feel like strategy became a lost art in marketing in a lot of cases because what you were doing it, when you're doing a very like in-depth digital ad buy, you're toying with headlines, you're toying with photos. What gets the metric right now, right? And that happened so much that again, holistic strategy I think disappeared. Because of AI and some of the additional technology that's been made available now, I feel like we're in the middle of the strategic revolution where people are starting to look bigger than the silos that they've been in historically. And in our organization, last year, about I would say August or September, the change that we made is we said, okay, this silo thing has to end for us because what we have is everybody thinking they're doing a good job. And yet, when you look at all the pieces together, we're not doing it, right? But everybody individually feels like they're doing a good job. And so now what we've decided to do is always assign an initiative owner. And that initiative owner, it doesn't mean that it has to be the person with that specific expertise, the person that knows how to do the tweaking of the Facebook platform and all of that. Instead, we want someone who can think strategically and own what is the big picture strategy that needs to map to the outcome that we're looking for, and then make assignments across skill sets in our organization to allow everyone else to work together on the outcome that we're looking for. And it has been one of the most, I mean, I've been running an agency now since 2016. It's one of the most drastic changes I've seen in quality of work from my team that I've ever seen in our time owning the agency. And of course, as soon as you do that, you're like, why didn't I do this 3 years earlier, right? But I really believe in what you're saying, Danielle. You had the strategy session where everyone hears, these are the outcomes. This is how we intend to work together to make it happen. And the result is everybody goes off and knows exactly what they're fighting for, right? And I see that as a huge benefit. And I think things are going to continue to go that way. I think strategy is going to have this resurgence, like I mentioned. And tactics are going to become a lot more commoditized because anything you don't know how to do, AI can teach you how to do it about 5 minutes. The differentiator for a human is the strategy, the thinking that needs to go into it. So we're trying to develop thinkers, not just doers, right?
Yeah, and that the AI is going to be able to do those tactical executions here pretty soon if it's not already. I'm going to ask you both a question because I'd be interested. So you sort of both talked about like setting a North Star of like the strategy is clear, so everyone has a purpose and everyone has a way to know how they fit into that, right? And how they're contributing to that. Because I do believe that the more you empower an individual and get out of their way and just say, hey, you need to head this direction and help everyone in this direction, the more motivated they're going to be, the more they're going to be able to contribute, which I think is what you're seeing. But I think one of the ways to accomplish that, I'm going to go back to my time in the hotel industry. We used to work with hundreds of hotels all over the world. And I could always tell in the first conversation whether it was a well-run organization or not by how collaborative they were. And I noticed a pattern, right? Because in hotels, you have the marketing team, you have the sales team, but you also have the revenue optimization or revenue management team, right? There's these three sort of silos. You could also argue there's operations as well as a fourth. The ones that were run well and were collaborating all shared the same thing, which was a consistent scorecard, where each of the heads of those three or four departments were looking at the same KPIs all the time, and they were talking about those KPIs. So they knew whether they collectively were winning or losing. So whether it was a marketing KPI or rev management or sales KPI, they figured out what were the most important KPIs, put them on a score sheet, and they were all looking at it, and that's where they were focused. So do you guys have anything like that? Like how does your team from different silos know that they're being successful, and how do you talk about it? I'm going to throw it at you first, Danielle.
Yeah, so you said two really, really important things. So one of the biggest things in our employee satisfaction survey is people said, I want to see how I roll up and contribute to the success of the organization. That was one of the biggest things. So having this process, and we did a very similar took the RACI and do that. But yes, we do. So we have for our we propose every year for our board to our board of directors. Here are the 10 things across the organization, and here are the goals. So it might be definite room nights. It might be travel industry sales room nights. It might be engaged web sessions and social engagement, number of members. And those are the 10. Those are in every leader's. So all of our C-suite, that is what we're incentivized on. So our whole team is on an incentive program from the CEO down to every assistant. Then when my team for I have global marketing, communications, content, social, creative, My leadership team has a team goal. And those are the things that across our team we need to do to roll up to that bigger goal. So if my counterpart doesn't make and maintain 1,600 members, it's as much as my duty to help her get there as it is the membership team. Vice versa, so that we are thinking holistically across the organization and are coming to the table to assist. Same thing on our marketing team. It's not just the social team thinking about how many social engagements that they had, how many engaged web sessions for this team, what are we driving consideration numbers? That is shared across the leaders on my team. So it makes it cognizant. And then every month we review those. Where are we? Are there challenges? Do we need to optimize something to because we're not making this goal in this country, so what do we need to do? Because each of those goals are then taken, at least on the marketing side. And if our goal is 50 million engaged web sessions, it's divided up by the countries. So that's how we hold our agencies accountable. That's how we hold our marketing teams working on those programs accountable. They have a portion of that. That's based on obviously a lot of things like privacy laws, money spent in that. But when you are incentivized across the board on your impact, and then I think the other thing is we've really, and Adam, you really hit it on the head, we've had some people that have loved leading some of these initiatives that they would not have been the first person. It ended up that the same people were leading everything. And they just don't have time and they're burnt out. And so we've told everybody leadership is a mindset. It's not about a title. Anybody can be a leader. So when you're asked, to step up and lead City Break or lead this or lead that, it's an opportunity for you to grow and stretch in
Yeah, to
maybe
take
a
ownership.
different way.
Well, and on that, Danielle, one of the things that I've found is you obviously are not going to, and I'll give an example. I'm not going to take my biggest client and assign a junior person in the organization to be the initiative owner of that client's number one priority, right? But I have learned that the way to keep people engaged by using this initiative ownership program is you have to give them something just outside of what they've shown you they could do before. Because if you just give them the same level of initiative over and over again, they don't grow. You need something that's going to stretch them about 10 to 20%, right? And it's been really fun because there's some people that you give an initiative to that you think will stretch them a little bit, and they really kind of struggle through it, and they get there, but it's tough. But then you've got those people that it's like, oh my gosh, we've been underutilizing this person by 20% because of how amazing they were in running that initiative, right? So it's actually a great way to explore the capabilities of the people that you work with. And then, Stuart, to your question about the scorecard, we're a little bit different. It's challenging for us because we would have 27 different scorecards because of the different clients that we're working with, and our job is to get them to their outcome. And so that's a little bit challenging. We have a financial scorecard that our executive team manages too, that's really critical, but we don't necessarily have like a single scorecard that we share across the agency. But there's it's funny, I had somewhere where I was going with that, Stuart, and it felt really
Did I ask you a
important.
question, Adam, being on the agency side? Because I'd love to hear this from the agency side. So, one of the things that we do, obviously, is our agencies have a responsibility. So, if they handle Latin America, right? This is how many engaged web sessions, how many web sessions, database growth, consideration. And that's how we score our agencies. Because every year we do an internal cross-functional review of our agencies. Because I might love them, but they might be hell on wheels for our finance team. But do you have that for all of your clients? And then do you share the responsibility of, like, if client A makes all of theirs and client B does and client C does, or does that not work the same in yours? Because I'm wondering, like, are we holding our agencies accountable enough? Are we different in holding them accountable in a different way than other people are holding their agencies?
It's a great question. And the hard part is that there's a couple of different circumstances with each client that makes it different. So number one, there's different levels of sophistication. You know, you've got like a two-person team in a small town in a state that is going to have a completely different relationship with us than, say, a Visit Myrtle Beach that has a fully built-out marketing team, right? And so we have to kind of tailor the accountability metrics to the sophistication or desires of the client. You know, one client may look at us and say, I need someone who makes my one-person marketing team feel like 10 people. And it's like, okay, well, that's the outcome that we're gonna help. We're gonna make it easy for that person. We're gonna help them expand their knowledge and do things they couldn't do on their own. Whereas if you've got a really sophisticated marketing team, they're gonna say, this is the specific outcome that we're looking for, and you guys need to help us get there. Well, that is very measurable and specific as well. On the agency side, though, I will say one of the things that I've found is like the most important metric is quality of relationship between the two parties. Like, do they like working together and do they feel like they're receiving value on both sides? And that is actually the metric that has resulted in more long-term relationships than any KPI I've ever measured.
So how do you measure it though? Like quantify it? Because I haven't seen like a satisfaction survey or anything that, like some of our vendors do send us that on a quarterly or annual basis where it's like, how are we doing? And I know some of them actually share that with their whole team and they'll analyze it. They don't necessarily go to the level of the client. Like a lot of times it might be more anonymized or aggregated, but they do say, hey, here's opportunity. Here's where our clients are saying in terms of what we're doing well and what we're not doing well and what we need to deliberately practice to improve. So are you guys doing anything like that?
We don't do surveys, and it's mostly because we're small enough to where I'm not looking at data at scale with our clients. We have a conversation towards the end of every year, and I know we did with your team as well, of like, hey guys, tell us how you're feeling about the different facets of the way we're working together. What can we do better? How are you feeling about the quality of what we're doing for you? And we really use that to decide the health of the relationship based on how that meeting goes. We have some clients in those meetings that say, I need you to do this better and this better and this better. And then we have some clients who are like, hey, it's going great. Just don't screw it up. Like, keep doing what you're doing, right? And I think we're small enough to where we're able to still kind of keep that pulse. However, I think there would be a lot of value, of course, in doing a survey and having like a specific client health scorecard for each individual client. That's a great idea that I'd love to implement.
Yeah, we do it a little bit backwards, Stuart. So we have like 10 areas. So it might be communications, it might be strategy, it might be this. And that's why we have somebody in each department that works with the agency, finance, creative services, data, marketing. They fill it out independently. And the agency does a self-evaluation. And then we bring it all together, and I sit down with the principals of the agency and say, here's where you did well. Here's the things that were identified. Come back to me with a plan on how you're going to fix it. We also use it as our way to validate that we're going to keep the agency, renew the agency's contract for that year.
Well,
So
so
for
you're saying
my,
you solicit the you
we
get
do.
your team to solicit the responses and then
Yeah.
hand that over to the
Yeah.
wow,
We have
that's
a
great.
form. And we send it out to all those that work with the agency. Because again,
That's refreshing. I like
I
that.
might
Really cool.
love them, but they might be like they never get a bill in. They never get,
Yeah.
because they're catering to the person they work with,
That's
or maybe
great.
it's some of a, and yeah, we have, and like I said, they fill out a self-evaluation and we compare them and we give them, and people, when they give a rating, have to give a comment of why they gave the rating.
Yeah, that's
So
amazing.
it's, and then we go back and we summarize it, and I meet with them formally and say, here's where you did well, here's where things didn't go well. Let's talk about what we're going to change or focus on this year. And then for our finance team and our stakeholders, I write a memo that says, hey, that based on the review of the agency and how they scored, we are going to sign. So for our external auditors, this and that, it gives us a formal process of the reason of why we, so it protects the agency and
Yeah.
us. of why we're going to continue that agency relationship. So it's been really great when we've gotten audited, and if they, as you know, they love to pick on media buys, they love to pick on agency relationships. So it's been a way to show we have a formalized process, and then,
That's, would you be
sometimes.
willing to share that evaluation document that you're using?
Yeah, we just,
Oh,
I
that'd be
will tell you, I
amazing.
used AI to help me revise it because I noticed it was repetitive. So I went in and I said, okay, take this, take out the repetitiveness, make it streamlined.
Yep.
And
And you saved
then
hours of work.
it
Well, let's
saved
do this.
hours of work, hours of work.
Would you be comfortable us sharing that with our audience, like putting it somewhere and letting folks sort of see what we do with it?
I don't see why not. It's
That's
a
great.
templated form. It's probably nothing that they haven't thought of, but
Yeah.
it
Well,
works for us. And I think that's a big thing
that's,
is do whatever works for you and your stakeholders. But yeah, happy to share
yeah.
that.
Well, that's awesome. We'll definitely put that in the show notes for folks to go and
Yeah.
look at and check out. And what kind of response are you getting from the agencies? Do they like this process? I would assume they do.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's I think it one, they do share the results, I think, with their teams.
Yeah.
I also personally have a call with the head of each of the agency every month.
Yeah. Oh,
And the
wow.
reason I do that is if there are things brewing, we can talk about it. It also gives me an opportunity to tell them a little bit about what may be going on in our world that we're probably
Yeah.
not going to share on that. But no, I think they do like it because I think for the leaders of the agency and for the teams, they get their creds and kudos. And it's something that they can utilize. Sometimes, and it's not always all good,
Sure, yeah.
and but it gives an opportunity. Every one of them said it gives us an opportunity to know well in advance that there's areas that we need to tighten down,
But that
rather than wake up
transparency is
again.
so valuable. Like
Yeah.
the fact that you're having that call with the principals on a monthly basis, that you have this scorecard where they can see not only what's going right and what's going wrong, but also how you measured it and how you got there. Man, that clarity for an agency is just so valuable. Like I think it
Well,
sounds
they're
really great.
partners, and
Yeah.
it's an extension of our team. And I would never want, so I would never want a team member to get to a review and be blindsided. So why would I want one of my agencies that are handling millions of dollars for us that need to be just as motivated on our team? And our goal is to be the agency's favorite client. That
That's
is
quite a goal.
always our goal, is to be the agency's most favorite client. And we're not easy. We have a lot of, and because we have a lot of stakeholders, when you're working with the theme parks and everybody is stakeholders that have a lot of rules and regulations.
Yeah.
So, that can get wearing very easily. So, we try to make it fun. They truly are our partners, not our vendors, because if they're as motivated in our success, they're going to do better.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is we sort of started this conversation talking about how do we break down silos internally, but you raise a really good point, which is
Yeah.
it's really not just our internal team. It's how do we break down silos in our extended team? You know, one of the things we always talk about with our agencies is when they're working together, collaborating with other vendors, they have to wear Team VMB's jersey, right? We don't want finger pointing or blaming or squabbling or undermining. Like you come in and we sort of have a rule that when you're on our roster and you're working for us, you do not undermine other agencies until it comes to RFPs, then you can go at it. Like that's like the purge every 3 or 4 years or whatever, where you can do whatever you need to try to win business that we're soliciting. But during the time you're on our roster, you got to play nice in the sandbox and remember that we all win and we all lose together. So I think it's really cool you sort of tethered those together. We weren't intending to have that conversation, but I think it's really enlightening.
And we have, I mean, when we're on with our, if we're doing the monthly update on how LATAM or whatever, it's a creative agency, it's a social agency, it's a media agency. Everybody's on, so they can hear what's
Yeah.
working, what's not working, and we can discuss it. We do that with even vendors. I mean, we all have vendors reach out to us and they're like, I want to sit down with you. And I'm like, great. And I'll invite our agency partner. And I have, if there, and we expect that same respect. And there have been people that have not done that, that I've said, we will never work with you again. If you can't respect our agency and our relationship with our agency, then we don't need to be doing business together.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that's
you
really good.
don't
Yeah,
need to
you've
be
got to
going
share those
around.
values. Yeah, that's really cool. So what, looking at, we're at the beginning of 2026, and it sounds like you've got a lot of sophistication at Orlando. I mean, you're one of the most well-resourced DMOs in the country, and I'm sure you have a lot of challenges too. But it seems to me, from my conversations with you and this conversation here, is you have a lot of really good processes and systems, right? That's how you manage to handle the scale of the work you have. But what are you thinking about in 2026 in terms of, because you're an optimizer, you like to continue to improve things. So what do you see as some of the priorities in 26 in terms of moving the needle in a positive direction for collaboration with your team and your vendors and your
So
agencies?
26 is Elevate. So we're looking at this organization. So it's elevating, it could be elevating process. It doesn't mean doing, it's elevating the impact that we're having. It's elevating your leadership. It's elevating your relationships. So part of that is, we have some really strong core values. We live our core values. They're in everybody's reviews, but it's really elevating. There's so much going on. And to your point, it doesn't matter whether you're a small DMO, a large DMO, you never have enough resources. Whether you're an agency, you just don't, because travel gets impacted by everything. So you think you're going down a path, and something happens and it doesn't. You talked about oil spills. We got questions about the oil spills and its impact on Orlando. I was like, we're not on a coast. This was from people in Chicago. So, it doesn't matter. It impacts everything. So I think for us on the collaboration side is we are really thinking about how do we streamline things to have the greatest impact so that our team has more time to think. So, are there things that we don't need to be doing? Are there ways that we can streamline things, whether it's through processes, technology, to give back? We do it to ourselves. All DMOs do. It's like, okay, pick a program, plan your vacation day, GMID. It's like everybody goes and brainstorms and they're so excited. We have 23 different tactics. And now we've said, okay, pick three. Because once you get past when somebody goes, what are you doing for GMIT? I'm doing this. They're like, okay, got it. You got it handled. Right. So we're really trying to be intentional so that there is time to deal with the things that are going to come up. So I think the collaboration is really, Adam, last year was our first year of really doing kind of that RACI and having that. We're refining that. So we make sure that we have clear ownership and clear collaboration from the outset. So one team to, because what I hear a lot of times, oh, I didn't get briefed on that. Oh, I felt left out. Oh, I felt, so it's like if you've identified the person from the social team that's going to be a part of that, they know that from the beginning. And I
Can I
think
ask you to
that's where we're
clarify
going to do it.
something just real quick for those that are listening? Because the RACI method is actually a brilliant way to just provide clarity in an organization, but I'm not sure everybody that's listening knows what RACI stands for. So will you walk through those?
So RACI is just, it's a framework. It's not our framework. It's a framework that people use. And it's basically who's responsible, who's accountable, who has to be informed, and who has to be considered. So you know exactly like who's a responsible or accountable person. And then you can assign people. And like I might, or my CEO might need to be informed. That also allows the team to make sure that they don't run too fast, because we've had that happen. And I'm like, okay, stop for a minute. Let's take this to senior leadership, get everybody's buy-in, and then you can iterate on tactics all you want, but you know what we're trying to achieve, and you can then also take tactics off based on that. The other thing that we're really, so it helps with the collaboration because people don't feel like they were left out somewhere because they're like, well, that team gets briefed and we don't get briefed at the same time. So we're going to work a little bit on what is that perfect cadence of how to do these different initiatives to make sure that we really are living what we say we're going to do, which is have that alignment every time on what we can predict. So when we, that'll take care of 60%, and then y'all know 40% just comes knocking on your door anyway. You're better equipped to do that. The other thing that we really talked about is write your programs and think of your programs as an award entry. Because, does everybody know the clear strategy and the clear goal? Has is it stated anywhere? So when you're thinking of all these tactics, is it going to impact that? And the person that is leading it can say, I think that's an amazing tactic, but I don't see how it ladders up. Let's save that for something else. And somebody's feeling doesn't get hurt. And then circling back around because, okay, we're done, great. And then we run off to the next thing instead of taking a moment and saying, did we achieve what we were trying to achieve? And would we ever do this again? And so I told him, I said, write it like an award entry.
That's
Think about
great.
it as like an award entry, because you want each of your initiative to feel like it could be entered as an award, but that is hopefully going to bring some more discipline to how we do things. And it came out of learnings. I went to go, okay, we have a bowl game that wants money. Like, send me the recap. They're like, oh, I don't think we ever did one. And it was just because that was at the end of the year and people got busy. And so I thought I was asking for something they could just give me in 5 minutes. And we all realized we'd missed that step. So we're going to look at, as much as we love to be innovative and we'll have innovative things this year, we're also looking at how do we more consistently bring that intent so that it helps our teams out and that collaboration becomes deeper. And it's like habits, So we're intentionally putting things on the calendars like these recaps so that we don't forget about them.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm so glad you came on the show because you shared so many pearls of wisdom. It reminds me a little bit what you're doing with the entries. I hadn't thought about it that way, but we sort of implemented something similar with it's kind of like a creative brief that we do at the beginning of a project where we sort of identify the why and stuff. We've done it. We developed it a lot with Adam's team, but we got it from a program that Amazon has. So Amazon for years have had this program where when they want a new initiative, they start by writing the press release. They write the press release for what it is because
Love
that
it.
encompasses everything, and then they work from there on actually building out. And they say 99% of the time, the actual press release they send is the one they wrote before they started the project. And I thought that was really cool. So we do it ourselves. We call it a universal project brief. And so it slows things down a little bit at the beginning, but it also speeds you up throughout the process, right? Because now you sort of have a playbook and you know what's important and what's not. And so you do collect the data you need along the way, and you sort of remember to look at the impact and things like that. So
Well, as an
I love it.
agency partner, though, it provides the clarity up front that usually we spend so much time trying to gather along the way. And it also requires your team to be aligned prior to engaging with the agency,
That's true.
which helps a ton. So that universal project brief we've really liked that.
Yeah, and then what I tell my team is, the times that we've done that, it's like, let's say Magical Dining, the 20th anniversary. I'm like, you guys, they're like, we're brainstorming, bringing it to you. It's like, it's a special year. We haven't aligned on, to your point, the press release on what we want it to be, and then gotten buy-off from our CEOs, more senior leadership. And so they had to kind of stop. And then we did that and we got alignment. And then I'm like, okay, I don't need to be in the meetings, because, sometimes I'm the hold up, right? But once I know that the strategy is set, then come back and check in with me. But I'm
Keep me
confident
informed.
that we're going to the strategy and that we're going to meet our community and our boards and our CEOs, etc. So love that. Stuart, you got to send it to me.
Yeah, I will. And maybe we'll put that in the show notes too, an example of that. So we're sharing all kinds of resources for people today. And it's not lost on me. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but in terms of leisure destinations, you and us are right up there at the top of TripAdvisor's data when they publish, who the top destinations are every year. It's usually New York, it's Las Vegas, it's Orlando, and Myrtle Beach tend to be the top four. And so we really appreciate the wisdom you bring. We're big fans of what you guys are doing, and we would love to have you back on this show and share more
Definitely.
pearls of wisdom
I feel
at a
like we've
later
scratched
day.
the surface.
I know. Yeah. I love the conversations, and that's what this show is designed for, where we sort of start over here somewhere with an idea and we haven't really fleshed it out. And that's why we don't do pre-meetings. We don't have conversations with our guests beforehand because we never know where the conversation's going to go. And so today we've sort of meandered, but we've sort of shared two or three what I would consider from you guys world-class best practices. And so hopefully our audience will take that, incorporate that, and they'll be better tomorrow than they were today. But Danielle, we're about out of time. So if someone wants to reach out and learn more about you, or reach out and pick your brain a little bit about some of the amazing stuff you're doing in Orlando, what's the best way they can reach out?
Just to email me. I mean, to be honest, I mean, I love LinkedIn, but there it gets overwhelming,
It's a lot of
the
noise.
amount.
Yeah.
It's a lot and everything, but just email me, reach out. My email, my cell phone, it's all in my signature anyway.
Yeah.
So, always happy to catch up. I always learn things from any of the conversations. So I love it. I love that we're such a great community. The DMO community is just special. And it's so nice to know that you can pick up the phone at any time. I have multiple times and said, "Hey, I need some help," or "What are you seeing in your area?" Because we all get asked the same questions. So, we might be competitors, but it's as we say, it's kind of co-opetition. If we all win and travel grows and we beat the couch. That's our true competitor. We
Yeah,
beat the couch, we all win.
it's becoming increasingly hard to beat the
It
couch, but
is,
we're going to
yeah.
keep fighting the good fight. Well, thank you for being here. Adam, if they want to learn more about you, where can they do that?
Yeah, Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. Find me on LinkedIn or, of course, on Tourism IQ.
Great. You can find me at stuart.butler@visitmontebeach.com, or you can check out LinkedIn as well. And Adam, you were saying before that you just posted something on LinkedIn about the difference between language between English and in American English, right? So people
It was
should
a
check that out.
promo for a webinar that we're actually doing. It actually by the time we publish this, it will have
Yeah,
already happened, but
it will have happened, yeah.
it's a fun video about the difference between the British English language and the American English language, and what it's like to plan a webinar with two guys on both sides of the pond.
Cool. Well, I'm hoping even if people don't attend the webinar in person, you'll publish that on your LinkedIn too, right? After the fact, I'm sure
Absolutely.
people would benefit from that. Well,
It'll
guys,
also
thank
be
you.
an episode on the Destination Marketing Podcast.
Awesome. Oh, that little thing, that other show that you have. Go check it out. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Please leave a like, subscribe, review, all that fun stuff. But most importantly, tell a colleague, tell a friend, tell someone at another DMO. I mean, just this episode alone is so worthwhile. Like the value that Danielle brought today in terms of just some great advice from a top-notch DMO is worth the price of admission, which is free. So tell your friends, keep listening. If you just joined us and this is the first episode, or you've recently started, go back and listen to the back catalog, because my goodness, there's so many gems in there and pearls of wisdom. We're getting the brightest people in the industry to come and just share secrets and share their opinions. And I think we're changing the mood of the industry a little bit. I think people that are talking to me at least are saying, hey, we're learning stuff, but it's also empowering us and emboldening us to think a little differently and be a little more radical and challenge the status quo, which is why we started the show. So guys, thank you for listening. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey Adam, I don't have an ending, so if you want to say something stupid, that would be great.
I think we just got
That's great.